Hello, folks, and welcome to Respawn Aim Fire's Barf episode, Backlog Accomplishment with Respawn and Friends for March 2024. We're talking about Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. I'm one of your hosts, Chad Michael. Hellblade is a great game. It's fantastic. You should all play it if you haven't already. This is full of spoilers in us. We have here our regular co-host, Adam. Did you play the whole thing, Gumbert?
I did play it all. I played it all in one sitting last night.
Whoa!
I would be shocked if you did not play it all in one sitting.
If you sit long enough, anything can be one sitting.
That's true.
That surprised voice, Alex, do you even know what game we're talking about, Cozina?
Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again.
That is a song that was sung by my choir in high school. I did not sing that part, though. That was only sung by the sopranos, the people with the really, really high registers in their voices.
Excellent. We're just going to have a moment of silence for that.
Yeah.
Not even my favorite church song, but it's a pretty good one.
It is a weird coincidence that we're doing this on Easter, and it's a game about a character that makes a sacrifice. Not entirely clear what the sacrifice is, but it is certainly an odd connection.
Well, we're going to now move on after that moment of silence. And if you are unfamiliar, if this is your first Barf episode with us, welcome. This is a game that we play once per month. Well, we don't play Hellblade once per month. But once per month, you tell us over on patreon.com/respawnnamefire and twitter.com/respawnnamefire what game you would like for us to play each month as something that is from our backlog that we've been meaning to get around to. Maybe it's a classic game we've never played before that everyone says is like part of the definitive gaming experience, etc., 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 etc. For the month of March, you all voted for Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice in anticipation of Hellblade 2 Senua's Saga coming out in May, and we played through it. It sounds like in various forms. I played it all the way through, Adam played it all the way through, and Alex sang a church song about Christ. So we are talking about that today, and at the end we will reveal what you voted for April's Barf game as well. Before we even talk about our experiences with it, I just want to run off a couple of things. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, is a 2017 action-adventure game from Ninja Theory. They defined it as an independent AAA game. Spoilers for next month's game, another independent and also somehow AAA game. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice came out on PS4 and Windows originally, and then a little less than a year later came to Xbox. And then a year after that came to Switch. And then 2 years after that, got an Xbox Series X and S only enhancement. And then also came to virtual reality on PC in 2018. Ninja Theory is now owned by Xbox and is an Xbox first party studio. But at the time, was not.
I just want to interrupt real quick. What's funny about this is, like, if you had told me, oh yeah, Hellblade originally came to all platforms and then Microsoft gradually took them under their wing, I would have believed that more than, no, this was originally PC and PlayStation only, and then Microsoft gradually usurped them over time. It is just weird how all those acquisitions have worked out that way.
Yeah. This game has been in development. It was shown off at Sony's Gamescom conference in 2014, so it's been in development for quite a few years before it ended up coming out. It has a lot of really positive buzz around it. Metacritic score sitting at the highest one is the Xbox One version at 88. And the lowest one being, of course, surprise, Nintendo Switch at an 80. And
still pretty good. Like, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, unless the game is broken, it's hard to get a bad score for this game. Spoilers for my thoughts on it.
Right.
And also won 3 game awards for best audio design, games for impact, and best performance for Melina Jurgens as Senua, who she's not even an actress. She was like, I can't remember exactly, but she was like a video editor. She was something on the team, and they just had her as a stand-in, just like for placeholder footage while they were working with stuff in the game. And then they're like, actually, you're just that good that we're not even going to hire an actor because you're fantastic. Alex, you had a finger pointing towards the sky. I know Christ is risen, but you have more information about this too.
For later on in the podcast, I have my whole voice actor trivia section. And yeah, basically I have exactly the same information that you just relayed, that yeah, Melissa Juergens, originally a part of Ninja Theory, a like freelance photographer and video editor, part of Ninja Theory at the time, was originally a stand-in for the character, and they were like, hey, you actually could do this entire part, you actually have this stuff. And so that's
and
really
then she
cool.
fucking won the game award for it. Wild.
Yeah.
So that's the game. Let's dive in. I'll just mention how I played it and my experience with the game so far. Atreus, Jesus Christ. I played it on PlayStation 4 originally when it came out. I loved it. If a long-time listener to the podcast, you might remember I actually, when I played it, platinumed it immediately and then actually bought it and forced Holden to play it on the spot because I thought it was that good. And then he played it and loved it as well.
Did you like buy and platinum the game like immediately after it released, or was this a little while
probably,
after?
It was probably in the same month of release. I was seeing a lot of good buzz about it and decided to get it. Adam, tell me about your Hellblade experience.
It's my first time beating it. I've started it before, but I didn't finish it. I forgot whatever reason. So this is my first time all the way through the video game. Like I said, I did it all in one sitting. I could have split it up, but I was like, fuck it, I'll just stay up to 1 a.m. and finish it because I'm enjoying it. But yeah, no, I started it. I don't know what system it was. And then this time I played it on Series X because there's the updated version. I played it in 4K 60. So that was really fun to see. They also had a ray tracing mode, but I was like, I don't need ray tracing. I'll take the 60 frames. It works for me.
Yeah, interesting note about the 4K 60. Not only did this game not get a PlayStation 5 patch, it did get a PS4 Pro patch. But it didn't get a PS5 patch. Mm. Not only is that the case, but then the game itself, you cannot find from the PlayStation 5 store itself.
I had the exact issue, yeah.
And in fact, when you boot up the game on PlayStation 5, if you find it in the app and then tell it to download on your PlayStation, you'll start it up and it says, hey, this game might experience some issues playing on your PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5.
I got that, yeah. I saw that notification as well. And I was really concerned because, like, I know that this game is doing a lot of interesting stuff in terms of binaural audio and things like that. And I was like, fuck, am I about to buy into a kind of crimped version of this game that, you know, won't live up to that stuff? Thankfully, that wasn't the case, but I was a little concerned.
That. Aside from finding it again on my PS5, I did not have any kind of technical issues with it. Alex, tell me about your play experience.
So my experience with this game prior to me playing it was very little. It was a game that came out and I was like, oh, that's interesting. The fact that it's a like apparently fast and easy platinum is intriguing, but there's very little about this game that like really personally speaks to me. And so I kind of let it slide me by. A year or so after, at least, I actually played, Enslaved Odyssey to the West, which is the game that Ninja Theory made back in 2010. And enjoyed that game a lot. That definitely got Ninja Theory on my radar as, oh, this is a developer of note. I should probably start paying more attention to the games that they develop. You know, what's funny about this game, Hellblade, is earlier, Chad, you alluded to this game taking a while to come out. What's funny is, even though I was never super interested in the game, I remember kind of keeping up with this game's development because websites like Kotaku and IGN would often comment on, oh, hey, here's the latest development update on Ninja Theory's latest opus. And I remember at the time during the PS4, Xbox One era thinking, wow, this game is taking a really long time to develop coming off of DMC, Devil May Cry. And nowadays it's like the amount of time that it actually took to develop this game, which is 4 years coming off of DMC, is like nothing compared to just the development of what it feels like every AAA game in general, including Hellblade 2, but that's a discussion for another time. So yeah, downloaded this game to my PlayStation 4 after a little bit of confusion trying to figure out where do I even purchase this game, even though it is technically available on my console of choice. And overall, had a great time with this one.
Nice.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just looking at the side, the background of the studio and stuff, because Hellblade was developed with about 20 developers. That's why they're like, we're an independent game, because they weren't owned and it was 20 people. But even back in the day when they were making like Heavenly Sword and DMC and Enslaved and stuff, they were like around 50-ish. Like right now, as of 2020, some maybe different, but they ramped up to 120 after they got purchased by Microsoft. So during that whole era where they made those like four games, they were like around 50-ish people. down to 20 for this game specifically, which is like, that's wild that 20 people can make a game that looks like a AAA game. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I know it can be done, yeah. But it's always fun to see like, oh yeah, basically nobody worked on this game, but it's, this is what it is.
And let's use that as a jumping off point. Looks like a AAA game. This was at the time, and even so now for me, an incredibly beautiful game. Like, the spatial animations in particular for Senua are just absolutely stunning. And so to know that that comes from a 20-person independent studio with a, you know, performance capture from a video editor instead of an actress, like that blew me away at the time. And you also see this same kind of thing carry over to marketing for Hellblade 2, where those trailers just blow your mind. You're like, this isn't a video game. There's no way this is actually going to look like this when it comes out. But then you've even seen other AAA developers reference that game, like Hellblade 2 specifically, as like a benchmark of, we want our games to look like that. Very impressive for Ninja Theory, because, I mean, even like DMC and Heavenly Sword, like none of those were like particularly visually stunning or impressive. So to have them go to this automatically right after that was just blew me away. Alex, tell me about your overall thoughts on the game. I know you said that you liked it, but like, what are some of your favorite things, some of your least favorite things?
Yeah, so like the thing about this game is, like, at the end of the day, this isn't necessarily my single favorite AAA game of all time. I don't know if I were in your position, Chad, where you kind of played it out of the blue and you're like, oh man, Holden, you need to play this game immediately. I don't know if I would do the exact same thing in your shoes. This game is still really great, though. And what I love about it is, to me, this is like an excellent blueprint for what more AAA games can be going forward in terms of kind of shortness and uniqueness, and still offering up what feels like a substantial experience without being kind of overly complicated. We're in an era right now where so many developers are talking about how, like, we need to stop making like overblown, super budgeted AAA games and kind of like seek out more experiences like Spider-Man, Miles Morales, these sort of like more smaller, expand alone scale experiences. And I feel like this game is just a great example of that kind of game. And it's a little unfortunate that like this game's release did not usher in a whole wave of other games similar to it. But I hope that people can go back and rediscover this game and kind of take notes from it. I really like talking about like the actual game's content itself. I really think that like conceptually this game is really interesting in that it is about this character who is suffering from some form of psychosis, but it's entirely taking place within a kind of time and place that's entirely removed from any sort of modern day setting, it being set in sort of the age of Vikings. I feel like nowadays, if you were to make a game that kind of tackles a similar sort of, you know, tough subject matter, I feel like it would usually be set within a kind of modern day setting or something that's sort of adjacent to that within even a fantasy setting. And so it's incredibly bold of Ninja Theory to be like, we're talking about this character who is suffering from some sort of kind of mental issue, but like in a time and place that is sort of completely alien to anything you know. I think that the combat of the game really, really surprisingly feels good. I think it's let down a little bit by just a kind of lack of enemy variety, but that aside, I was kind of shocked by how good the combat feels. Game's gorgeous, as we've all been over. And of course, so much of the binaural audio stuff, I actually play this game with headphones, is extremely impressive. So much so that now I'm like, fuck, should I actually just wear headphones more often when I'm playing these games? In general. And I think all the performances of all the characters are really strong. Obviously, Senua is great. But I also think that Nicholas Bolton, who portrays Druth, who's the guy who speaks whenever you interact with any of the lore stones, is a real highlight too. Game's not perfect. Like I said, I think there's a bit of a lack of enemy variety, which can make the combat sequences feel a little monotonous at times. I think the puzzles are good, but I never felt like I really had an aha, that's really clever moment like I did when I played something like Signalis earlier this year. And a little unfortunate that there's no chapter select functionality. I actually, I just platinumed this game like literally an hour or two before we did this podcast. And I found myself in the shitty situation where I basically got through the entire game, got every single lore stone on my first playthrough, except for one that was in the second to last area of the game when you're exploring the big mountainous Helheim area. And so I had to like quickly speed run through the game to get the final lore stone. Thankfully, wasn't too long to get there. Like I basically was able to blaze through it in like a couple of hours. But yeah, that was a little bit touch and go.
Adam, what about you?
Oh, very good game. Yeah, being my first time, I was like, okay. Like, I knew the gimmick, right? I know it's like, you hear the voices and the binaural audio, and it's like, all right, behind you. And like, I knew about all that kind of stuff. But actually playing the game, I was like, yeah, no, this lives up to it, and I like it. And there are a couple things that specifically stand out. Two of them are just funny, goofy things, and the other ones are actually serious. So it's funny for this game to come out in 2017. Features somebody who's not from the North or of Norse mythology, dealing with Norse mythology and having a head on their hip and right. hearing stories about Norse mythology from a disembodied voice, which I think is very funny, obviously coming out a year before God of War 2018. And then what I really do like is obviously like Sigma looks great. They clearly know how to do mocap and stuff. But they do the thing that Alan Wake 2 eventually did, where like, so Senua is fully like in game, in engine, whatever stuff. But Druth and Dillion and all the other characters are like live action human actors put into the video game.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I like that. That's cool. Y'all are out here doing the thing. So that's just fun to see like two other big video games come out and like do other things that are similar to this.
I remember having to look that up whenever I first played it, because I was like, I don't know. Her face looks good enough in this game that like those could just be animated faces, could performance capture faces.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's that full motion video over top.
I do want to say just real quick, as somebody that played the God of War games before this game, I will say this game does do a good job of like having the lore feel very kind of distinct to what we got to experience firsthand in God of War. Even though a lot of these stories are similar and familiar to us, there was never a point where I'm like, oh, I've heard this story before. I feel like the game did a really good job of having its own flavor, its own take on this lore that kind of kept it feeling fresh and unique and not just like a rethread.
I'm upset that his name is not Surtur. It's Surt. I've always said Surtur.
That was annoying.
It is what it is. I guess we've been wrong. But then, like, seriously, things about, again, I like the presentation that this small of a team could come up with this idea. The idea of being like, all right, we're going to focus the game. I mean, it's about psychosis, obviously. But then, like, you think about... So I love it. So Sin was on this journey, obviously. And she's like, well, I have to... So the man I was in love with was killed by Northmen. So that means his soul would hold to the rules of Norse mythology, because she's not Norse. Like, she's specifically Celtic. She's a Pict, I believe, is what it is.
Yeah.
I was looking on Wikipedia.
P-I-C-T, I think, but is how they could spell it.
Yeah. But she's Celtic, so, like, which will come into play. So that's cool that she, like, has to go to another mythology, and, like, that's how she has to save the one that she loves, because that's how she was killed. Or that's how he was killed. And I just love the whole thing that's like, yeah, they're like, oh, she has the curse, she has the darkness, she has all this. But it's just like, nobody back then would have known what psychosis was. Like, specifically, right. Again, we're doing full spoilers. The whole idea of like the shadow, it's like, oh, I've always been here, I'll never leave you alone. And it's really just like her father's voice and him being like this, like diehard, like, I'm assuming he's a priest or something like that. He's obviously very Christian. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, your mother said she heard these voices of the dead. So she's clearly like, she's basically a witch, and I had to like burn her at the stake because she wouldn't, and I've got to get this curse out of you. And it's like, oh no, you just have a mental, you know, like disability or whatever, like, you know, psychosis specifically. And like, nobody would know what that was. We're like, oh, you must be possessed by a devil, because we're Christians and it's 1600. We don't know anything different. So that's really cool that she gets to go on that journey. And like, obviously we understand the context of real world, what that is. So like, her going through it and figuring out like, oh, I blocked out this memory of my mom, but like, Hela looks exactly like her mom looked like when she died. And, you know, her father being the shadow and all this. I'm like, oh, you guys did some cool story stuff here. So I was a big fan of that. And then like, combat and puzzle. Like, I thought combat, it's good enough, especially because you get upgrades. I'm like, this is fine for an 8-hour game made by a couple people. Puzzles are, I specifically like, because this is a PS4 game initially, that I like the fucking, I don't remember his name, Odin's dad. the guy with the illusions.
Oh,
where you look through certain gates and then it's like different on the other gate. Remember, that was a whole big thing about like PS5 and Xbox One. Like, oh, look, the portals in Ratchet and Clank, you change in an instant. It's like, this game did it 3 years before that. So that's pretty cool that they pulled that off. But no, it's just, I think it's a very cool game. And I think the length is perfect. Like, give me more 8 hour games like this. Like, when they were making the sequel, obviously it's been taking a long time to come out. I remember Chad brought up, like, man, I hope it's not like a 20-hour game or whatever. And they were like, no, it's going to be like the same length as the first one. So I'm like, oh, yeah, 8 or 10 hours, but even like 10 times the budget is just to make it look prettier. Like, I'm super into that. So, yeah, give me more 8-hour fantastic games, really cool backstories and stuff. I'm all about it. So, yeah, super, super big fan. I'm glad I finally beat it because it was going to stay on that backlog forever if we didn't do it for this. So
I really enjoyed a couple big things that I feel like I have more to say on. One is the depiction of mental health. I love that the first thing that you see in the credits, in the opening credits, as you're canoeing through this water, is the very first person is mental health supervisor. Like, that's the first person they credit in this game. I was like, okay, that's a cool touch. But also the immersion that you feel and like kind of experience as her. First, this is a game with no HUD. Speaking of God of War having that ability to have no HUD and still direct you anyway, that was one of my favorite things about that game. And that was, I fucking love that about most games. If you're able to just be immersed in it with no distracting UI elements, fucking loved that. But then, as Alex mentioned, the binaural audio of these voices in your head, the psychosis, as you can, seeing the like behind the scenes documentary of them recording it, how they're just like walking around and sprinting by the microphone in different ways, and you can actually hear them in those exact spots around you while you're playing the game, is awesome. But then there's this thing that I still haven't decided. I haven't looked it up to see like if there's a definitive answer, but I haven't really decided whether or not this whole journey that she's taking is all in her head, or whether she is like actually going through this Norse mythology type thing. The biggest thing, that part of the psychosis is like being able to see, like seeing things that aren't necessarily there. And a lot of the puzzles are all about, there's this Norse rune, and I happen to find a shadow from a tree that looks like a rune. And it's like, most people wouldn't even consider that a thing, but she's like, I almost think of it like the Jim Carrey movie, Number 23, where he's like, I see 23 everywhere. And it doesn't really mean anything, but it's like, you think it does because of what's going on in your mind. But then the big thing for me was her mom, which we find out at the very end. You know, she was burned alive, burned at the stake, and we see her as that giant being at the very end. But if we look at the door to Helheim and the depictions of Hela on it, they describe her as a woman with half face in light and half of it is dark. And we see mom at the end depicted that way with half of her face burnt away. And I'm wondering if none of this Norse mythology stuff actually existed that she was experiencing, and she just kind of took the pieces in her life and constructed it out of it. Like, her mom is now Hela as you know, ruler of Helheim. She doesn't have to do this for Dillian's head, but she's like making it up. And all of these puzzles and things like that, they're all just things that she's seeing and kind of forcing them to be this Norse mythology journey that she's going through in her head in order to like come to terms with it and accept her grief and accept being her own person out from under her father's voice and that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I thought that was really fascinating that we're kind of put in that situation, and I'm not even quite sure whether this whole thing actually played out or whether this was just all something she made up in her head as a way to deal with all of this shit.
Wouldn't be shocked if like 20% of it's real, the rest of it's fake. Because there's really, there's two things that are interesting. There's one of the little lore stones where he's like, so she has this ability to see other things or whatever, see this other reality. And people just like, you know, ignore her and say like, you're wrong, that's not a real thing. Because it's like, they're probably not willing to think that like, if she sees a real reality, then what am I actually looking at? Is it actually not real at all?
Yeah.
Like, for quote unquote sane people. So again, I mean, it's mostly metaphors and stuff, so I wouldn't be shocked if none of it was real, because she does black out and just wake up. But then I also like, she looks at the narrator and at the player multiple times. She's like, hey, we're about to do this. Like, I see, I love at the very beginning when she gets off the boat and they're just all talking, like, turn around, da da da. She's like, hush, I hear you. And it's like, oof. I don't like that. Don't look at me anymore, lady. Look the other way.
That is something interesting. If you try to, while Senua is just standing idle, if you try to look directly into Senua's face, Senua will always turn away when you try to move the camera around her. And I was wondering, like, is this just the way that the game functions? Like, is this something that wasn't made with any intentionality? That's just how her character model works in response to the camera? Or is that her trying to avoid us, the player, in the much in the same way that she so often tries to ignore the other voices in her head and just sort of stick to her own path?
One last thing that I just remembered.
Hard house as fuck. But anyways, go ahead, Chad.
The one last thing I remember that kind of lends itself to this theory that it's all something she's making up in her head is, in most areas, after you, like, for instance, the Surt, when you beat Surt, this fire god person, you walk back through that entire segment of the level that you have just walked through, and it looks completely different. Like, it looks normal. It's daylight outside, everything's green and beautiful. But when we came through it the first time, before we had overcome that demon, everything looked decrepit and burnt to shit, and we were dealing with so many things and saw these runes, and they're like, oh, this is how the world actually looks versus how I'm seeing it right now and making it up in my own brain. And one final thing I really wanted to bring up as a way to immerse us as Senua was the first time you die, when you see the rot go up her hand and you get the message on the screen that says, hey, when the rot reaches her head, the game is over. Like, you will lose all progress and she will die and you have to start over from scratch.
Oh, so what's the deal with that? Because I remember that being discussed when the game first came out, but I remember it being this thing where, like, people actually tested it out and they determined that, in fact, the game does not automatically end if that happens.
Right. So
did either of you experience that?
It is a fake. It doesn't actually exist that way. In fact, you can die and die and die and the rot never goes above your shoulder. But it's there to make you think that way so that you have this anxiety in your brain the entire time that you're playing. Like, fuck, okay. I can't die right now. If I die, this might be the end of everything. Whereas in reality, there's nothing really to worry about, which is a really cool meta way of making you kind of feel more like Senua.
That is really cool and meta. It would be cool if they straight up went full, like, Nier Automata and allowed you to, in fact, like, actually choose to, like, die in that way. But I understand that there's, like, a concern with these big AAA games of not wanting to wig out players with, like, crazy mechanics like that.
It is short enough, too, that, Chad, like, you could have gotten away with doing that.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, again, that ready? Just lends more credence to the fact that, like, hey, this doesn't actually exist. This isn't actually happening to you right now. It's all in your head. If they didn't actually start your quest over.
Chad, are we ready for some voice actor?
Yes,
trivia?
We are. VAT, baby. I don't know what VATS is, but I think it's like some kind of tax thing in Europe, or I don't know. But VATS.
Yeah, it's also the system in the Fallout games that allows you to aim real good. Yeah. So obviously, we already talked a little bit about Senua's actress, Melissa Jurgens, who, of course, was a member of the Ninja Theory team and was initially brought in as a stand-in for the character until they realized, hey, you can actually do the whole kit and caboodle motion capture experience. And yeah, won a whole ton of awards for it. And I think well-deserved. In terms of the other characters of the game's cast, Dillion, the Mimir stand-in head on the side of the character's waist, who's brought throughout the entire game as a skull, but who you occasionally hear at various points during the game, is a British actor, has mostly done TV shows like The Brave, Indian Summers, and Treadstone. I've not seen any of them.
Nope, me neither.
A lot of British actors do like 100 TV shows you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Druth, who is sort of like the wise old leader who's knowledgeable in the ways of the Northmen, was portrayed by Nicholas Bolton, who's an actor who has a slew of credits across TV, movies, and games. He was the pit announcer in Game of Thrones. He's appeared in Doctor Who. He was a character called Henry Condell in the movie Shakespeare in Love. Unfortunately, I don't remember that character, but I do remember that movie. Good movie.
Oscar-winning movie.
And he's had a lot of video game credits.
A lot of people say it shouldn't have been.
A very contentious contentious Oscar-winning movie. And he's had a lot of video game credits across games like A Plague Tale Requiem, Forza Horizon 5, Amnesia, Final Fantasy 14. He's like appeared in a lot of modern games in like small roles. But I would say this is probably his best. Shadow, aka the voice of Senua's father, was portrayed by Stephen Hartley. And no disrespect to this guy, who I think puts on a great performance in this game. I will say, you open up his IMDb page, and it literally says, one of the best-known faces and voices on British TV, film, and radio. And his three most prominent roles on his IMDb page are Alexander, The Making of a God, Brassic, and Happy Valley. Three shows that I have no knowledge of and I've never heard of before.
British listeners are like, oh, yeah, mate, I love that show growing up. It was so good. And we're like, I've never heard of it.
I hope there are people like that. Apparently, he was the voice of Max Rebo in Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. He was the voice of Aridin in The Witcher 3. And he was Shibata Katsui in Neo 2. Two more. Galena, aka Senua's mother, was portrayed by Ellie Percy. She's an actress most known from Black Mirror Bandersnatch, the 2020 movie About, the 2021 movie The Dig, and the 2022 movie that we've also all definitely heard of, The Stupid Boy. And as far as I can tell, she did not have any other video game credits. Last one, I almost didn't even consider putting this one in here, but I wanted to give her a shout out. The actress that portrays the narrator of the game, who you hear, I would say, the most during that introductory segment where she's coming in on the boat, is Chipo Chung. She's an actress who's done a smattering of work across TV and movies. However, the role that I know her best from is she is the voice of the Icarus in the movie Sunshine by Danny Boyle. She's the like robotic voice of the spaceship.
That is a movie that I've heard of and seen multiple times.
Always forget yes, Captain America's in it.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's voice actor trivia.
Nice, nice, nice. I have one final question before we reveal next month's Barth game. How does playing this game affect your views on Hellblade 2? Like, were you mid on it before, and now you're like, this is a day one thing for me? Does it not change at all?
I mean, I was always going to play it. I was just like, at a certain point, hey, just stop showing me trailers. Give me a date. And they're like, oh, here's the date. I'm like, okay, cool. But now I'm like, I'm glad we did this before. Because I'm like, okay, now I'm excited to like know what happened before and be able to jump right in and see what she's up to. I was going to play it regardless. But now having context obviously makes it more interesting. So, yeah, I was going to do it anyways. But now I'm more excited to do it anyways.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how they continue Senua's saga. Hey, because like I will say, it, very, very, very small complaint of mine. But when we got to the end of the game and Senua was like, I have yet another journey in store, I was like, like I feel like this game is like pretty one and done. We know that a sequel is coming, but like you could have told me that this game was just a entirely self-contained story with no sequels, and I would have been perfectly fine with it. So interested in seeing how they like figure out how to continue her story. I will say, like, I'm most looking forward to Senua Saga Hellblade 2 from the perspective of just knowing that it will be a game that is as short and succinct and to the point as this game was. I think we've all experienced the I'm trying to search for the word here, but like we have all definitely suffered from being in an industry that is a little inundated with super large, super drawn out AAA games as of late. And I think we're all looking forward to more games like Hellblade 2. And yeah, this game has definitely gotten me really excited for that kind of experience.
I have voiced my opinion on the regular podcast that, yeah, I'm getting Hellblade 2 trailer fatigue, whereas I'm seeing enough of that game, and I was starting to even get a little bit down on it, to the fact where I was like, yeah, it's coming out in May, I'll get around to it, I'm sure. But after playing this game, I'm like, fuck, I forgot just how good everything in this game is, and now I'm like, I'm gonna pre-order it and play it immediately.
Myself and Adam definitely made the right call, like not playing this game until like the absolute last moment before the sequel releases. I feel like if we had played the game before like the kind of like marketing cycle for Hellblade 2 ramped up, we might have been in your position of like, all right, I'm a little bit tired out. playing the game now, I think, was definitely the right call.
All right, we will wrap this up with the reveal of April's barf game. So we asked you all again over at patreon.com/respawnnamefire and twitter.com/respawnnamefire to vote. Reminder that your vote counts much more on Patreon than it does on Twitter. We take the results of the Twitter vote, and that becomes one single vote on Patreon. And so Adam has revealed, after looking it up on the internet, that you all voted for Dave the Diver for April 2024, which means we'd be playing yet another independent AAA game back-to-back with Hellblade. Although, a close second, remind me, Adam, I forget what the game was in second that you're going to play.
Oh, yeah. So on Patreon, it was far and away going to be Dave the Diver. On Twitter, had a lot of... a lot of people voted on it than they normally do, and it was Before Your Eyes was like 68%. So I was like, Dave the Diver technically is still the winner, because like I said, Patreon counts more than Twitter, but I'm gonna play Before Your Eyes just for those people who obviously people are like, this game is great, so I'm just gonna play both. But yeah, Before Your Eyes was the Twitter winner, but Dave the Diver is the overall winner.
How long is Dave the Diver? Is Dave the Diver even a game you can beat?
I think it's like 12, 14, something like that, when I looked up on how long to beat.
Dave the Diver, main story, 24 hours.
Yeah, okay. We'll just play it.
Okay, yeah.
To be fair, we don't have like a big press conference that we all got to fly to Boston to do during the same month in which we have to beat this game.
By the way,
that'll definitely help.
Did you guys, I only told it to Chad and Alex, the reason for the games, they were Dave the Diver, they were Chicory, it was Before Your Eyes, and then what was the last one? Can anyone look on the poll really quick and tell me the last one? The whole idea was April showers bring May flowers. I'm like, what are games that all have water in them in some way? So it was like, Dave the Diver obviously takes place in water.
Dead Island 2.
Dead Island 2, yeah. There we go. Dead Island 2,
which
islands have water around them.
But Dead Island 2 doesn't even take place on an island. It takes place in L.A.
But L.A. is next to the coast. There's water. Yeah. And then Chicory is
also
watercolors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, even looser. And I played that game.
Before Your Eyes, you either cry or part of it takes place on that boat when you tell the stories. So there you go. Water everywhere and not a drop to drink.
I guess it's only appropriate that the only game on this list that actually has anything to do with water actually won.
There you go.
Well, Dave the Diver actually is your restaurant. So I guess you serve water. And that's going to do it for our barf game discussion this month. We will see you on our regular podcast. If you are watching us live on Twitch right now, we will switch over and go live again in about probably 10, 15 minutes. For everyone else, you just hit next in your little feed of however you're watching this. Bye.